Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is the home of Jerry's percentages.
Jerry hates Hayes almost as much as he hates Quebec City and Hamilton and Philip Pritchard.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Brian Hayes, Jonas Siegel from The Athletic, and Craig Button in here. Dwayne Casey, the head coach of the Raps, will join us at 5:30. They went 2-0 over the weekend yesterday against the Knicks, which was a formality. We knew they technically had to play the game, but we knew what the outcome was going to be. Cannot say the same thing about Friday night. That was a highly anticipated game with Houston in town, and Raptors won again. They sweep the season series against Houston. And Cleveland goes out to L.A. and just pukes all over themselves. The Cavs are a mess right now, even with LeBron. Kyrie Irving's banged up.
The East looks completely open.
The East is wide open. Yeah. Like, at the very least, you can sit here and believe that it's a coin flip in the second and third rounds against whoever you play against. And the idea of the Raptors in an NBA Finals, it's not a punchline, it's not a hot take. It's not. There's nothing hot about it. It's room temperature. The Raptors in the NBA Finals is a room temperature take.
I wonder, though, how we would be feeling. Let's say they play the Cavs in the second round, it would be. How would we be feeling if they had to take on LeBron?
Oh, coin flip. Better than a coin flip.
Yeah. I'd still be nervous because it's LeBron.
Absolutely.
But he would have to go like beast mode for 7 games.
He would have to do what he did against Golden State when they were down 3-1 in games 5, 6, and 7. He'd have to do that every night because Kyrie Irving's not there anymore. Kevin Love's been banged up. Tristan Thompson, who knows what's going on with him.
Yeah.
J.R. Smith is basically done, and he's relying on all these kids. Yeah, that's where they're at. He's throwing soup at coaches, J.R. Smith. Like, that's what you can bank on out of him.
That's such a great story.
It's
not for him, but just like that was the reason he got suspended.
My brother, my youngest brother, who's an emergency room pediatric doctor in Pittsburgh, we were in one of those scraps as kids growing up, and he threw a hot pot of tea at me, and I ducked out of the way, and it went against the wall. Well, my dad went ballistic. Like, you know, here's my brother and I, we're in this scrap, right? He, you know, it could have been scalded, but my dad went ballistic. He starts taking the flour out of the things. He pours it on the floor, sugar. And he just dropped all the dry goods in the middle of the kitchen. But by the time he finished, my brother and I were best friends. We're laughing at what my dad looks and he goes, I guess I'm going to have to clean this up.
So he had to clean it up.
Well, he did. Like, but
did he ask for you guys to help out?
No.
Really?
No, I think he realized that he had really. But, you know, when I think about soup, I immediately thought about my younger brother. Like,
yeah.
You know,
who throws soup?
Tea at me. Yeah.
Who throws soup?
Especially if it's good soup. If it's bad soup, I'd throw it.
I'd toss a soup. I wouldn't throw a soup.
Like, if you're mad at somebody.
I guess. But how angry can you really get at a coach where you pick up soup? Like, if you're eating good soup, you're not mad. What's that guy doing? That's like, did he take your soup away and you got it back and you threw it at him because he did it?
Probably which some would be counterproductive, right? Right there. That's what you're thinking, yeah.
Ratings are in down in the States anyway on NBC from the Valspar Championship. And to no one's surprise, the numbers are just through the roof because of Tiger. To put it into perspective, in 2017, the Masters rated a 7.6. In the States. The U.S. Open was a 3.6, the British Open a 3.2, and the PGA Championships a 3.6. The Valspar did a 5.1 yesterday. So larger audience in the States, and I'm sure the same thing up here, than the U.S. Open, British Open, and PGA Championships a year ago, and substantially larger, and closing in on what the Masters did. And that's all Tiger. And I know that there are some people that hate on Tiger or hate on the coverage that comes with it, but you're in the minority. Like, the fact is, a lot of people want to pay attention to Tiger Woods. They want to see him play well again. They want to see him in the hunt. And we got into it last week, the idea of Corey Connors, a Canadian, in the lead. And no one wanted to see him plummet. But I said on Friday, I'd rather see Tiger win because that's more of an intriguing story to me. And be honest, if Tiger wasn't in that tournament and Corey Connors was in that lead, a lot of people probably would not have watched And if he had won the tournament, they would have said, oh, that's pretty cool. A Canadian won the tournament. Awesome. I didn't see any of it, but that's really cool that, he did that.
Thursday, we sat here, and we talked about Tiger in that round, the first round. And there was some conversation around this table that Tiger won't get to a negative score that day. No, he won't be at but he did. Mm-hmm. He got into the negative scores that day, and, mm-hmm. you know, he really went from there. But that belief.
And now he plays next weekend at the Arnie Palmer at Bay Hill up in
He's
Orlando.
Won it eight times,
but you
I
know
think?
What's a, mm-hmm. a better story along those lines is Federer. Like, Federer for a while, for like four, was it like 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
He went a Grand Slam.
Yeah, he kind of fell off.
And now he's like back on top, and he's, I don't know how old he is. He's got to be like
36, 30. I think.
Yeah.
And I think he's 36.
He's climbing.
High 30s.
Like, he's way
okay,
ahead
so given a choice, like, if you had the choice yesterday of Blue Jays preseason, Raptors, Knicks, or Roger Federer, what were you done?
Fed.
Okay. Good. I'm just trying to get a sense
like
of
tennis.
Where you're...
Yeah. And Fed's like, he's fun to watch.
Yeah, oh yeah.
No, he's just a great player, for sure. And it's more difficult to win at an older age, conventionally
yeah.
playing tennis, than it is golf. He's an incredible story. Two goats going at it. Yeah. Federer, probably the goat in tennis. And
who's a bigger goat?
Overall? I don't know. It's difficult to say. We'll get into it later.
Okay.
We got Ray Ferraro on the line, joining us on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. I believe you were flying yesterday. Did you get to watch Tiger or what?
I watched. I landed. I got off the plane. I raced to the TV that was about 100 meters away and saw him walking off the 18th green.
That's a bummer.
Disappointed.
Do you know what Jonas did yesterday, Ray?
Trivia.
No, he didn't. He had a choice of watching Tiger, Blue Jays preseason, or Raptors Knicks. And that
was a choice?
Well, that's what we said. He did not watch 1 minute of Tiger. How disappointed are you?
Well, I guess he could have been sitting with Noodles, who wouldn't have known which end of the club to hit the ball with. But like the story of Noodles riding around in a golf cart at Pebble Beach and not playing, still just...
I know.
I think he did that at St. Andrews, too.
Like, you're right. It was St. Andrews. That's right.
Hey. Yeah.
But Jonas, what did you watch? Preseason baseball?
It's called spring training, Ray.
And is that what you watch?
A little bit. I wanted to see if Donaldson would play. I just traded for him in fantasy baseball, so.
But when he wasn't playing, what else was there to watch?
Well, I watched a little Joe Biagini.
Okay.
Then I flipped over to Raps, watched their bench, you know.
Listen, I love the Raps, and I love where they're at right now, but them playing the Knicks, as I said, that's a formality.
I didn't watch the fourth quarter.
There's really no need to watch.
Just think if Jonas was your roommate, and that you would have to stuff him into a laundry hamper if that was his choices to watch yesterday.
Yeah, that would have been reminiscent of when I was a kid. I have two sisters growing up, and whoever got into the house and said, like, calling dibs on the TV, that kid got it. And I'd be like, are you kidding me? And my sisters would be watching Full House or whatever, which I enjoyed from time to time, too. Let's be serious. But if there was a big sporting event and I'm like 14 or 15 and they just happen to call dibs, like you need judges and juries and stuff for that kind of stuff. Because
and you
it's
know
unacceptable.
They would call it just, they'd call it just to bug you.
Oh, yeah. They didn't have anything they wanted to watch just to bother me as much as possible. We were talking about Mitch Marner in the previous hour, and Jonas keeps writing about him, and you have no new material for Mitch because you've written everything about him. But we were discussing just the tale of two seasons for Marner, because first half he just didn't put up very good numbers, and at times he looked as if he was kind of overcome by the moment and couldn't find his game. But now this kid's on fire, and he's still a kid. I mean, it's his second year, but he's only 20 or 21, and the numbers he's putting up are huge. He's probably going to end the year up with about 25 goals and 70 points. I mean, what do you make of this kid?
Well, at the start, I thought he looked really, you know, not because he was scoring, but the byproduct of not scoring was that he looked really young, that you could see he was stressed. He'd come back to the bench and could see the frustration just kind of dripping out of him. And then whatever changed, well, you know, all of a sudden if you go back to the start, when he got hot, he got a couple of goals in quick succession. And then it was like his mojo came back. And he started to hang on to the puck in the offensive zone again. He seemed a little quicker, seemed more sure with the puck. He is shooting it far more, you know, as we see. And you know, Jonas, you've written about that, you know, like when he gets it, he thinks shot or looks shot far quicker than he did in the past. Man, he's a creator. He's kind of a right-handed Patrick Kane, really. I mean, the styles are very similar to me.
So Ray, we were talking earlier just about that second year in the league. So go back to your second year in the league. You come into the league, you know, it's fresh for you. The opponents don't know you. What happens in that second year for a player, and for you specifically, as the league is adjusting to you and they go, geez, this guy's pretty good, and they challenge you in different ways, and then you got to adjust, you know, with respect to, you know, getting your game back in order to where it was in your rookie year?
The biggest problem most of us have, second-year guys have, is your mind gets in the way. So I played 44 games my rookie season. The next year, played a full year. I had 77 points, I think. The next year, which is my second full year, I had 59. And the reason I say your head gets in the way, I just, you know, I expected, and because you want to always achieve, I wanted to have a better year than I had the first year. And then it became apparent pretty quickly that I wasn't going to. You know, I mean, to average over a point a game, you know, you have to be, you can't have too many slumps. And I had a slow start, and all of a sudden you're behind the eight ball. Now you start to stress. You start to try some things that basically are cheating offensively to try and create a chance or two, and that doesn't work, then your ice time goes down because you're not productive, and now you're in a hole. And the biggest challenge, I think, is to, you know, is just to try and keep yourself aggressive but level-headed. I mean, look at Nylander at the start of the year. Same thing. Man, he was coming back to the bench. He looked totally defeated as he got back there, and then all of a sudden he got an empty net goal or something, and the puck started to go a little bit more for him. But they're fighting themselves more, or just as much as they're fighting the rest of the league.
Well, and then you got a guy like Matthews, who's a step above them in terms of just overall impact and talent and just being a spectacular player. Yet he's had more curveballs to deal with this year than Marner or Nylander. Mm-hmm. Like Marner, it was, again, he didn't put up points, and maybe it was a bit of a mental grind, and Nylander the same thing. Matthews dealing with physical issues, and this is the third lengthy injury he's had to deal with, and he's not going to play on Wednesday. I can't imagine he would play on Thursday, maybe Saturday versus the Habs, but at that point we're talking less than 10 games left in the regular season and the real stuff beginning in less than a month. The first two he came back from maybe took him a couple of games to get going, but eventually he looked like himself again. Any concerns from your standpoint, Ray, that this third one just could get him and we won't see the real Matthews again?
Not yet. I mean, if this lingers another, you know, if it doesn't sound like it, but if it was going to linger five or seven more games and he was going to be out 15 and then play two before he started, yeah, I'd be worried about that. I'd be worried about his conditioning and his timing. He's gonna have plenty of time. You know, if the time frame is Saturday, you know, thereabouts, you know, he's going to have plenty of time to, you know, to get everything kind of back in gear. But a couple of years ago, I had a really cool conversation with Adam Oates. Mike Green was playing in Washington still, and Oates was talking about the difficulties that he saw as a coach for Green, that he'd play 15 games, get hurt, and miss a significant period of time, and then this went on for a couple of years. He'd get hurt again, and he's like, every time he got hurt, it was like a new training camp for him, but everybody had moved farther down the road. And so that's the danger when you get hurt multiple times in a year, is that you know, the guys are kind of moving to the next level of where their games are, of where their compete is, like how hard they compete during the game. That gets greater and greater as the year goes on, and you're just trying to catch up. And maybe it's different for a player like Matthews, but for most guys, it becomes a real challenge.
Well, and Ray, Babcock's contention is that in this case, unlike the last one, he's been able to skate, so he's able to keep his conditioning up, whereas with the concussion, like, he was off the ice for a while. So do you think that maybe helps him in this case?
Oh, conditioning-wise, for sure. However, you know, like, just think of when a team gets a break, 5-6 days off, and they get a couple of days of rest, and then they skate hard, and they come out, and in the first period, they stink. They're terrible. Happens all the time. And it's because even though you're in shape and you're rested and you feel good, you're just not ready to play. You just, you know, like your, maybe your reaction's not quick enough, your decisions with the puck aren't quick enough. So Mike Wright, this shouldn't be an issue for him because he's been able to, you know, to work out and to, and certainly to skate, but there's another step that he's going to have to go through. And I think that's the benefit of having, you know, 10 or so games left, that he's going to get to handle the puck and find out, you know, in his mind's eye, oh, yeah, that's how much time I have. Oh, I've got to go quicker than this. He'd turn a puck over and then figure out, oh, no, I got to go quicker than that. So I don't really have too much worry about it. I would worry more if it was a knee or, you know, something like that, that it would be a little more difficult. But once he's healthy and they know he can bang around and not be worried about it, I don't have too much concern that it'll be a problem for him.
Well, I think Scheifele's in a bit of a different situation because he's had two problems with that shoulder, right? And they're saying it's not the exact same injury, but it's the same shoulder. And that has to play on your mind a little bit if you're Mark Scheifele. If you're coming back, how do you not, just based on human instinct, kind of stiffen up a little bit if someone's coming to hit you? You know, change your approach to going into the corner. I mean, when you have two injuries like that over the course of a month, month and a half, or I guess a little bit more than that, that's got to affect, or you have to believe it could affect Mark Scheifele once he does return.
Well, I can't imagine he'll be really comfortable. You know, you get cleared and everything's fine and the doctors say you're good, but you're nervous. You can say until you get banged around again, but it's when you don't expect to get hit, that's the test of whether, in this case, his shoulder's okay. You know, when you get, look at how he got hurt this time, him and Wheeler run together and something kind of erratic and, you know, odd, and now he's hurt again. But they've got a 6-point cushion with a game in hand on Minnesota. So they've got some time to not have to think about getting him back in either. And so their playbook has to be caution more than anything else.
Yeah, I think they're both in the same boat.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. They might change. I guess that could change, but yeah, not going anywhere.
No, you know you're going to the playoffs. You know you got a good team. And you know you need Scheifele and you need Matthews. Like, it's really a carbon copy. You can argue which team's better and which one has the better chance, but they both play the same role on the team. Scheifele is to Winnipeg what Matthews is to Toronto.
100%. And you could also take it one step further, Brian, in that they both know pretty much who they're going to be playing.
Right.
You know, Winnipeg's probably going to play Minnesota. And, you know, in Toronto and Boston, have been locked in for 3 years, it seems like.
Well, and that's what's going to be intriguing about the final 3 weeks of the year, because, you know, Babcock's not going to let them off the hook until they truly clinch and they know exactly what's going on. But you have to believe, you know, if they've clinched and they're in with 4 or 5 games left, he's going to scale guys back a little bit, maybe Anderson back. But you might look at a guy like Matthews and say, we got to get him some minutes. He's got to play. So
well,
the game plan will be curious.
Him, right?
No, you can't.
Once he's ready to play, you got to play him. And maybe you don't, you know, if a guy, say Jake Gardner's playing at 25 minutes, maybe you play him at 21 minutes. But you're not going to play him 14. You know, it just never seems to work like that. And for every one time that somebody gets hurt, there's thousands and thousands that nobody ever does. And as you get to towards the end of the year, I think you probably want to spread the guys out a little bit if you can, get them a little bit of rest, but you gotta play them. You can't just have them sitting there. Although when Montreal was winning, they used to send Larry Robinson down to Florida so he could go to his horse farm for a week. He always started the playoffs with a great tan.
That's a great idea. Well, remember, was it Cleveland that did that with LeBron a couple of years ago?
Yeah, he went to Miami for 2 weeks.
He just left. It's like, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. And it worked.
Yeah. See you later, fellas.
Yeah. we're so good, we're so far into it, and I'm so important that I don't really have to be here right now.
And do you think, I would say Jonas's attention to, what did you call it? Spring training baseball.
You're a Red Sox fan. Shouldn't you know that?
Preseason ball for me. Spring training, preseason. Doesn't matter. When they're stampeding through the Eastern, you know, through the East, they'll be, it doesn't matter what you call it. Not like, you know, you can cheer for your team, Jonas, and you can.
It'll be a nice wild card for your Red Sox.
Perhaps. But do you think he even knew LeBron that they were playing when he was away for 2 weeks?
No. Gone. See you later.
Who? What was the score? I don't know. I don't even know who they were playing.
What does he care?
Ray, you've got the Ottawa game tonight, right?
Yeah.
So I was just curious. If you were an opposing GM and you were interested in Erik Karlsson this summer, would there be any trepidation in trading for him based on what you've seen this season? Or would you just assume that, you know, he's coming off an injury, a tough year in Ottawa? Or would anything you're seeing now or all year kind of get at you a little bit?
The first part of the year, Jonas, would bother me. And then I'd have to take a step back and say, look, he's got a completely rebuilt ankle. I thought his skating was not anywhere near what we're used to seeing with him early in the year. He got beat to the outside. There'd be a little bump on the boards. He'd lose his stride. And you're like, man, that never happens to him. The last little bit, he's been way, way better. It looks like Erik Karlsson. The one thing that doesn't look like Karlsson is, to me, he's totally disengaged from the game. Like, he's just out there right now. He's kind of just skating around. And so I wouldn't be too concerned about how he looks performance-wise right now, I don't think, because I think I would have in my head that he's just trying to get to the end of the year. It's been a miserable year. So don't get me wrong. It's not like he's not trying. He's not, but he's not 100% invested. And I see that. You see that with lots of players, eh, Craig, when you get towards the end of the year, and they're in the game, but they're just not invested in it. And that's what it looks like for Karlsson for me.
Yeah, no, and you got to be real careful in how you evaluate them in that regard too. You know, because yeah. I mean, what is he got? He's got 50 points. I looked and just saw the other day he's up to 50 points, and you know, tells you how good he is. He can do it by accident.
Yeah, the one thing I would be, you know, because you can't take one away from the other. I'd be nervous about paying anybody 8 years and $100 million. Uh-huh. Like, more than anything else, like, it's just, it's such a commitment, and it puts such a dent in your cap, and it shapes and defines the course of your team for the next 8 years.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Ray.
Someone's going to pay it, though. It may not be 8 years if he's a free agent. It'll be seven, but someone's going to pay it.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
All right, buddy. Enjoy it tonight. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Are you guys all back tomorrow? Like, I see everybody's deserted.
Yeah, Noodles is back. O's on March break.
Okay, do you realize, Brian, you came back and everybody left?
Yeah.
Are you aware of that?
Is that a coincidence, or are you saying that I'm the cause of it?
I think we need to do some investigation to this, but I think you're the cause.
Yeah, I might be. I wear that as a badge of honor. I'm fine with that.
Ray, I think he just has to ask himself the question. That's where the examination begins.
Is it my problem? Is it my fault? I don't care. These guys can come back when they want to. I like working with Craig and Jonas.
I think that's very evident, too.
Yeah, I'm in a good mood today. Even with the clocks moving up, I got to say, man, my body clock, completely out of whack. Completely out of whack. And I am milking it. Like, I put in 5 hours watching Tiger yesterday. And when my wife asked me 45 times over the course of those 5 hours, I just said, body clock, it's just a little bit off. Little bit off.
Now, did your wife ask you how much longer? And you said, probably 30 minutes. How many times did you say that?
Yeah, when he was on the 9th hole, the 12th hole, the 15th hole, and even on 18. It's about a half an hour.
It's just about done. It's just about done.
Need to watch the post-game routine, too. Anyway.
Awesome. Talk to you tomorrow, guys.
All right, there's Ray Ferraro on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. For fast approvals and competitive payment options on heavy equipment from any dealer, visit valiantfinancial.ca. There's a lot of Canadian teams that are just kind of there, right? They're just kind of there, and a lot of fan bases that are already looking towards...
There? there as in the bottom of the league?
Yeah, like they're there because they technically exist and they have to play out the rest of their schedule, right, but they don't care about what's
right
going on.
In they're in the basement with no light.
That's exactly where they are.
Four of them anyway.
And Calgary's hovering, but they're on the outside looking in. And
they're
Glenn
out.
Gallatson did his whole screaming routine again today, which is very original. And
I think it's over for Glenn Gallatson too.
It feels like that kind of time for Calgary anyway. They're not going to get back on track. And you got the Leafs in Winnipeg, and this is setting up for an absolute nightmare for non-Leaf fans in this country. Because if it's only Toronto and Winnipeg, Winnipeg's the smallest market in the country, do you know how much Maple Leaf coverage is going to be happening on the major networks and the big newspapers and all the radio stations?
As it should be.
As it should be. The Leafs didn't tell the Habs to suck this year, or Vancouver, or McDavid and the Oilers.
And you know what? The Winnipeg Jets, because, I mean, their fans in Winnipeg are unbelievable. These are great fans. And they're going to be right behind it. But bottom line is, they're not the Leafs.
No. The Leafs are the Leafs. There's only one team in Toronto, and it's the Maple Leafs. And the fact is, again, these other teams plummeted. And for a decade, they had exclusivity over the playoffs because the Leafs weren't in it. So you had your decade where the Leafs were golfing in mid-April, and there was no Leaf talk until closer to the draft. That's not going to be the case through the spring. Will not be the case. Same thing applies with another team here in Toronto, and that'd be the Raptors. The Raptors are now 3.5 up on Boston for top spot in the East. DeMar's winning the Player of the Week again this week. That's 5 times this season. It feels like Dwayne Casey may end up as the coach of the year.
Him and James Harden have the most Player of the Weeks.
That's right. DeMar and Harden's supposed to be a lock MVP. I think he still is, but DeMar should be getting some more love. We'll get Dwayne Casey in here. We'll get him to make his case for DeMar DeRozan and look back on the weekend with the Raptors head coach next. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider in studio in the 6 p.m. hour. He's having the same issues getting in here today that I had.
No,
he's
Darren
here, though?
Yeah, I saw him.
He's officially made it to you?
I have eyeballed him.
Crazy story in the East End of Toronto with like a police shootout, reportedly, and robbers on the run.
Did you plug Waze in to find an alternate route?
No, I hate that app.
Oh, you should.
Just based on your personal experience with the Waze app.
Okay,
too bad.
I
get here on time every time now.
See, I'm not a fan of the app either.
Thank you, Craig. You and I, we're both on board. Anti-Waze. Raptors on fire. They went 2-0 over the weekend. They're in Brooklyn tomorrow night. And they're 3.5 up now on Boston in the East. 10.5 up on Indiana. Cleveland's moved down to the 4 spot in the East. And here's the head coach of the Raptors joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here's Dwayne Casey. How you doing, Dwayne?
Doing great, Brian. How you doing, buddy?
We're doing pretty well. I mean, I pointed out the standings. You guys are 3.5 up on Boston, 10.5 up on Indiana. You must be feeling very comfortable right now.
Well, not comfortable. You never get comfortable. in this business, once you get comfortable, somebody will turn around and catch you. So, it's good. You know, again, we've built our program to get to this spot, and we just want to continue to build on what we have going. And that's the most important thing, keeping the momentum going. Had a great win Friday night against Houston. I was worried about the effects it was going to have on our team on Sunday, but the guys bounced through. They stayed professional, which I think they've done the entire year. And I was really proud the way they bounced back, because that could have been a trap game against New York, even though their record is not as good. They're playing, you know, the young guys and developing them, and it could have been a different story.
You know, you talk about, how your team has played, and, you know, one of the fascinating things for me, Dwayne, is the way that you've changed your team without changing. I mean, in sports, everybody wants to change players and move this guy in, and you look at it, but, you know, with Masai and yourself, you looked at internally changing your approach, changing the way you wanted to attack different things, and it's created great results. How does that play out in that process when you and Masai start talking about some different ways to approach the game and using your players differently?
Well, it started last spring. You know, when you don't have success that you want to have in any business, you talk about changing things and to be better, and what can you do better. And one, we changed the offense. And again, people make a big thing out of it. It was more by subtraction than it was addition. We had our drive, kick, swing mentality part of our offense within our play sets. And what we did, we took away calling so many play sets for DeMar and Kyle and just went right to our draw, kick, swing mentality. And so that's the difference, and more than anything else. So it was a change, but it was more subtracting things out of what we were doing. So the guys bought into it, and any process you go through in any company, any business, if your employees, your counterparts don't have a buy-in, then it's not worth the crap. And that I attribute that to Kyle and DeMar and the older players that have been here for buying into the change. And again, on top of the offensive part, we had just as much of a defensive change or different look as we had offense. So, but the key is the guys executed it, they bought into it, and the results are speaking for themselves.
Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Raps, are coming off another big weekend, 2-0 over the weekend, back in action in Brooklyn tomorrow night. And you mentioned the anticipation going into the game on Friday night. And you guys end up winning against Houston. You sweep the season series against Houston. And everyone's got a different take on what that means and what it says about your club. How did you feel about it, and what do you think it says about your team?
Well, B, one thing that I said before the game, win, lose, or draw, and I say this before supposedly the so-called every big game, it's not going to make or break your season. And the first time you start looking at that game or whatever big game it is, yes, it's a big game. It's great for the fans. It's important for the fans. It's important. You know, it's a big game, but it doesn't make or break your season. So, yes, we beat them twice, but you know, what does that get you? Does that get you a win in the playoffs or whatever? And no, it doesn't. But it's a measuring stick. It lets you know where you are, what you can do, and it should give our guys a boost of confidence. But in big picture wise, or what standings, or what it's going to get us in at the end, it's one of the 82. But from a confidence, motivational standpoint, it does give the guys a boost to say, hey, the so-called best teams, we, you know, had good games against them, good games against Cleveland, good games against Boston. And so we know where we stand from that standpoint.
Well, there were a number of guys who played well on Friday, but it felt to me like a lot of the talking points after the game revolved around your big man in Jonas Valanciunas, and he hit those big two free throws late after the turnover late in the fourth quarter as well, where he put it on the floor, and I was thinking, oh, Dwayne's not going to be happy about that. But, you know, he's always been a guy who's – I've had a difficult time getting a read on where he fits into the team, where he fits into the system. Take us through your thought process when it comes to the importance of Valanciunas and the role you see him playing come playoff time.
Brian, that's a good point, good question. And the fact that Jonas has been so maligned or so talked about over the years, why don't you play him in the fourth quarter? Why don't you make teams adjust to you with a bigger lineup? Well, again, there's a growth process with him also. You don't want to put a young man out there that, in my opinion, in our coaching staff's opinion, was not ready to play against smaller lineups. If you can't dominate at the one end, then it's going to be a deterrent for you on the defensive end. Jonas has gotten so much better. He's improved every year defending. His jump shot has improved, being able to stretch the floor. He is now ready to be out there and play. And the small lineup with Houston is off the charts with P.J. Tucker at 5. So they were really small. And so he did a good job of making them adjust to us, spacing the floor. He's still learning how to play out there. The turnover he had trying to drive to the bucket, I'd much rather for him to shoot that three-point shot than try to put it on the floor and drive, because that is another part of his game where he's got to grow to understand that there's going to be hands and bodies and people trying to take the ball from the corner to the basket from him. He's not there yet, so I'd really rather for him to shoot the three or rotate it out in that situation. And again, that part will come. But he's grown so much, he's improved so much, and he's now ready to be in there, at the end of the game. And to say that, his growth has been tremendous is something that we're really happy with and proud of him being able to go and to make those two free throws. And to even to catch that pass, Brian, was a tough pass to catch. He's got great hands. He went up and got it and closed out a big game.
Was that fourth quarter stuff, Dwayne, and anything you had to discuss with Jonas in previous years, like kind of let him know where he needed to get to be?
Great, good point. Yes, we did, always. You know, talk to him about the things he had to improve on, mainly to be able to guard in pick-and-roll situations, where in the fourth quarter, the pick-and-roll game is a big part of the game, and if you can't defend the pick-and-roll and you're giving up layups and you're not dominating on the offensive end, then it's hard to keep you in the game. And so JV had that challenge in previous years, where now even early in this year, we had situations where we put Serge at the five, and as the year went on, Jonas got better and better and better and better at being there and guarding pick-and-roll situations and rebounding and defending the basket, protecting the rim, and then spacing the floor on the other end. So that has come about as this year has unfolded. But we talked to him about, hey, JV, you haven't done anything wrong. It's the matchups. And until you improve your game and get it to where you can defend pick and rolls and stretch the floor and make plays on the offensive end, you know, it's going to be tough to keep you out there. We've got to, you know, put a smaller guy to match them at the four, at the five position. So he's done it. Jakob is getting close to being able to be there at the same stage. So all of our bigs are really improved themselves to be able to play against a small lineup team.
With Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Raps, your Wildcats made the tournament. Kentucky in the 5 seed, the dreaded 5 seed. You know a 12 seed's going to win somewhere in this first round. I'm leaning towards Davidson, Dwayne. Sell me on your Wildcats. Sell me on Kentucky.
I've got two friends. Bob McKillop is a good friend of mine from Davidson, who's a coach. He's done a great job with that program, you know, developing Steph Curry over the years. And now John Calipari, I just texted both of them and wished them luck. And lo and behold, they, you know, so I think Kentucky, with their talent, they're gelling at the right time. And I'm not just saying it because it's Kentucky. I just like the way Tal has grown his players, his youth, his one-and-done players. He's got them ready. And it just seems like every year at this time of year, they come together, and no different from this year. So I think it's just going to be tough for Davidson. Just talent level, period, is going to be very difficult. So I'm going to have to go, even though it's my Cats, I have to go with the Cats in that situation.
Well, you mentioned the one and dones. I mean, you've had a lot of experience over your years. I'm sure coaching high school players, kids that were only freshmen that came out, and even, you know, four-year students. How big of a difference is it from a one-and-done player and a kid to a guy who stuck around in school for 3 or 4 years?
Well, you're looking at Norm Powell. Norm Powell is a guy who was ready, almost ready for the NBA right coming out of college. DeLon Wright. Those two young men, by being in school, staying there for 4 years, getting the coaching, maturing as men. It's just so much in the NBA that goes on as far as life, basketball, managing the time, managing your life. You have to be a mature young man to be able to handle it. LeBron, it was tough for LeBron James to do it. It was tough for Kobe to go through that one and done or whatever it was that first year. So there's very rarely just father, there's not a better teacher than Father Time. And unless you're just a superhuman person that, you know, is mature beyond your years coming out of high school, it's tough to grasp everything that's thrown at you in the NBA to be able to come in ready to produce and ready to produce wins. Now, you're going to be able to produce numbers just off of talent, but to come in and produce wins for a winning team after being a one and done is the most difficult thing to do, I think, that a young man could do, because it's just so many things he has to learn.
Raptors in Brooklyn tomorrow night. He is the head coach of the Raptors, Dwayne Casey. We always appreciate you doing this for us. Good luck tomorrow night, and we'll catch up down the road.
Thank you so much, B. Always glad to talk to you, buddy.
Yeah, you too. There he is, okay. The head coach of the Raps, Dwayne Casey. Loves talking to you too, Jonas, Craig.
You got it, B.
If O was here, he'd just be going nuts.
B.
Yeah, that's Dwayne Casey's our guy.
Yeah, he is.
We're a fan of Dwayne Casey.
Yeah, oh, we are. I'm a big fan.
And he's a good guy.
And I'm a fan of B.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you, C. C and J over here.
He's going to win Coach of the Year.
Yeah, I think he's in the running. Oh, he's obviously in the running.
He's the front runner, I think.
It's him. Probably D'Antoni's going to get love.
Brad Stevens, Celtics have kind of fallen off.
Yeah, so he's they probably started.
I love what he said, though, like, and it's so true about, you know, trying to get buy-in. As you're trying to create whatever you, whenever you want to have change, people have to believe that the change is going to benefit them and they can see the results and everything from it. So, I mean, that to me is this coaching 101, management 101. What a terrific job they've done.
Well, and he's right. Yesterday was a trap game coming off the high of Friday night. You go into New York, the Knicks are a disaster. You don't even know who you're playing against.
See, and if Jonas would have answered the question that way, why he watched that game instead of the Tigers and then presented it, you know, it's a trap game. I wanted to see how they handled it. I wanted to see if they were too high on themselves. Yeah. You know what? But he just dismissed Tiger out of hand.
That would have been a stronger case. So thanks again to Dwayne Casey joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Just go online, mapletoyota.ca. Jason Sobel will join us to look back on Tiger's weekend and what this means for him going forward. And Darren Dreger in studio at 6:20.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Can we call you sometime, Pocahontas?
You got a number? Want some of this?
How about a little of that?
All right.
Mow Your Lawn Monday.
Brought to you by our friends down at the Irv Pub, featuring a made-from-scratch menu and a great selection of local craft beer right in the heart of Cabbage Town. Stop by the Irv Pub. Say hi to our good friends Regan and Jackie, the best pub in the city.
I gotta get to the Irv. I gotta get to the Irv.
Oh, it's outstanding. We were down there last spring,
remember? Loved it. Loved it. And you know what? Spring is in the air. Yes. I really believe that. We gotta get down there.
Let's do it,
Love their food.
It's outstanding.
We should just go there for lunch, you and I, B.
Let's make it happen, see? You have a guy who, looking back on the weekend, put on a performance that would allow him to walk into the bars, wherever he happens to be, and put on a clinic.
That's a good question. I'm still getting my head around this whole mow your lawn.
I know. Like, it's a difficult one to figure out.
It just is. Jonas, do you have somebody?
I was going to go with, I don't know if I can go, I can go with more than one person, right?
Yeah, you can go with whoever
I was going to go with the Raptors bench yesterday against the New York Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
Big right. again. I was also going to mention Jonas Valanciunas for Friday against the Raptors.
Yeah, he played well.
So I'll just keep naming players.
Okay, well,
Dwayne Casey.
I'm going to say Tiger Woods, but I'm reluctant to say Tiger because he might actually take my advice and start hitting that scene again and chasing girls around, and then who knows what's going to happen. But I know he didn't win the tournament. Again, we've joked about it. Paul Casey won it. No one even cares. No one's talking about it. But Tiger, performing the way he did, should be feeling good about himself going into Bay Hill next weekend. Ladies, look out.
And I'll tell you what, he's won big time there. You know, I'm going to go to Saturday night, and I'm going to go to Freddie Anderson. I don't know if he gets enough credit. And I know that sounds silly, but, you know, watching him in the net, not only does he look good, he looks controlled, composed, unflappable. All the things I like to see in a goaltender. I mean, he made 38 out of 40 saves. I mean, Hainsey put the one in.
Right.
Can't blame him for that one, right? I mean, but just that.
Oh, it was money. That was a bounce back game too.
Yeah, you know what? Money. That's the word.
Yeah. No, he's been. He's been their MVP.
And when you play like that, you don't have to take money out of your pocket when you walk in the front door.
That's
of that
right.
Bar.
Right into the VIP. Yeah. Bottles on ice waiting for you, right, Jonas? Like you and Masters on the road. Again, shout out to Regan and Jackie down at the Irv Pub down on Carlton. Jason Sobel on Tiger, Darren Dreger on the Leafs. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.